Welcome to episode 19 of the Shaping Digital podcast. I'm Wessel.
And my name is Philip.
Today we have a special guest calling in from Singapore, Mr. Sangeet Paul Choudhary. Sangeet is an international best-selling author of many books and articles, most notably Platform Revolution and Platform Scale. And that's exactly what we're talking about today, platforms. Sangeet advises organizations and countries on their platform strategy. We will talk about how platforms differ from traditional business models and mostly how can companies with traditional business models determine if they should transition to a platform model and if so, how can they form their platform strategy. Sangeet, welcome first of all, great to have you here. We've read your articles with great pleasure and really shape our thinking on the topic, so we'd like to jump straight in. First, since we hear a lot about platforms, it's probably good to discuss some basics. Can you please explain to us what a platform exactly is and what conditions must be met up to set up a platform?
Yeah, absolutely. So a platform business model is a business that allows the participation of multiple parties outside the firm, producers and consumers of value, to come in together, connect to the business and create an exchange value. So if I give a few quick examples, Amazon has worked as a platform over time, adding its retail model to a model where third-party merchants can connect in and engage. And we see other companies like Uber, for example, connecting drivers and travelers. Airbnb, even though it's going through a tough time right now, has always worked like a platform connecting producers and consumers of accommodation. So essentially, that's the central core construct. Whether you think of a social network like Facebook or a marketplace like Amazon, or then operating system like Android, or increasingly, traditional industries, healthcare, financial services, all of them re-architecting in this model. The idea of a platform is very far-reaching and can be applied to any value chain in any industry. The where a platform is different from other business models is that traditional business models, what I call pipelines, used to work in a model where they would create a product or service, ship it down, and send it to the end customer. So there's a linear flow of value from the producer all the way to the consumer, and the firm individually is the end-to-end producer. And what happens in a platform is you are no longer just focused on the end consumer, you're also getting external producers. So the way you focus on the market completely changes. Secondly, instead of using internal resources to create the value proposition, you are now leveraging external resources. So think of a hotel using its rooms versus an Airbnb using external accommodation. You're using external resources in the ecosystem to deliver the value proposition. And the third key distinction, and the most important distinction, is that value is created not through internal value creating processes, but through interactions in the ecosystem. You manage interactions between the producers and consumers, and that is essentially the goal of the platform, to manage these interactions. So if I were to summarize, a platform provides a plug-and-play business model that others can connect to, and then its goal is to manage interactions between these parties, and it sets the conditions, the rules of governing these interactions.
Right. So instead of a company really optimizing its processes to make a similar product a little bit cheaper every single time, a platform enables interactions between different players, producers and consumers.
Right. And it goes beyond just the operational excellence argument that you just mentioned. So if you mm-hmm. look at a traditional pipeline company, it can innovate in different ways. It can innovate through operational excellence. It can innovate through product innovation. So if you look at any of these components, all of those are within the boundaries of the firm. They are all based on internal resources, based on internal ability to deliver the value proposition, and based on an internal operating model. What happens in a platform business is that you innovate not by improving your internal ability, you innovate by providing the external stakeholders the ability to better produce and better consume. And so let me give a couple of examples over here. If you think of a marketplace, for example, where buyers and sellers come together. The goal of the marketplace is to help sellers better understand the market and so provide them with the analytics of how to sell. The goal is to help them set up the online shop. The goal is to help them influence the consumption side. So they provide the tools to help the sellers improve their business. And on the other side, they need to improve the consumer experience. So for that, they need to have the right reviews and rating systems to distinguish between different types of products being sold. They need to have a good recommendation engine so that the right things are recommended to the right consumers. So if you look at all the points of innovation in a platform business, they are or the points at which the value proposition is delivered, they're all towards enabling the producers to produce better and more and enabling the consumers to have more relevant and targeted consumption.
Okay. I think I understand the distinction. And one thing that I think is quite interesting is that you wrote an article on this subject, pipelines versus platforms. So make it very simple, traditional business models versus platform models. And you wrote it in 2013, so almost 7 years ago. And
right, there was one in Wired Magazine that was 2013. And there was a bigger one in the Harvard Business Review that was 2016.
Right. Okay. So for over 5 years, this has been a topic that you've been describing quite thoroughly, and quite interesting. In the beginning, you mentioned that a platform business model can be relevant or valuable for any sector, any industry. No one will be surprised to hear that Airbnb or Uber have not just potential, but have already disrupted gigantic markets. Is there any specific sector or industry where you've seen this happening more recently that you think could have a large impact?
Yes, absolutely. So we're beginning to see the rise of platform business models in traditional industries where a lot of the shift has happened in the last 5 to 6 years. So before I get into specific examples, let's think of it this way. The first set of industries that got impacted because of platform business models were highly information intensive. And so once you had a way to deliver the same information in another way, if once you had the ability to digitize the key components of the business, you're immediately susceptible to platform disruption. So media, telecom, retail, transportation, these are all information intensive industries in the sense that even transportation is information intensive since smartphones came up and a location became digital. And location is the key variable in transportation, right? So those were the first set of industries. The second set of industries that have started transitioning over the last 5 years have been more regulated industries that have become deregulated during this period, banking, healthcare, and related industries. And the third set of industries are resource-intensive physical industries, manufacturing, construction, mining and metals. All of these have started moving in the direction of platform business models as well. And I'll share why these shifts have happened. So if you look at the second set of industries where a lot of the shift has happened in the last 3 to 5 years, we've first of all seen massive deregulation. So if you look at the European Union, the rise of the Payment Services Directive, PSD2, started driving a lot of this innovation in the banking industry where banks were required to open up their payments data to third parties. And so something that used to be an asset and source of competitive advantage for banks started becoming commoditized and open. And when that starts happening, you need to start thinking about how do you shift your business model away from the traditional model to where the new source of advantage would lie. A second thing that started happening was that banks usually provide models of payments which work behind the scene, but the context in which these are provided are typically commerce, the purchase of a house, the purchase of some item. And so with the rise of businesses like Amazon and Facebook, a lot of banks started becoming providers to these platform companies. And so banks started having to figure out, do we continue to just become a provider into Apple Pay or Amazon or Facebook Messenger, or do we create our own platform business? And so it's a combination of new business models coming in to threaten them, as well as regulation, the deregulation working against them, that banks have now started to think about how they become platform business models. So just an example of that would be if you look at the purchase of a house. A bank traditionally focuses only on the providing the mortgage, but the maximum value in that whole journey happens in the search of a house and in the maintenance of the house. The search of a house is a highly contested space because you have a lot of companies trying to go after the user there. But then once the mortgage is provided, nobody helps the homeowner. So banks are now setting up these home ownership platforms to kind of help homeowners better engage and then manage a whole ecosystem of service providers around that. That's just one example. If you think of healthcare, we've seen the same thing happen over there because healthcare, there are if I take just one example, in healthcare, there are healthcare is fundamentally an information problem, and the diagnosis and the treatment of a patient are both information problems. In the sense that in during diagnosis, you need to understand all of the patient's data and make the right decision, and during treatment, you need to match the right solution. Mm-hmm. If there are pacemakers from five different companies, which is the best pacemaker that should be applied, and these are all problems that can be solved with platform-based models. And over the last 3 to 4 years, I've been working actively with some of the largest companies in the space, solving both the diagnosis and the treatment problem by creating platforms where multiple sources of information can be brought together to create one single source of truth about the patient. And then the right solution, even if it does not exist within the hospital, can be provided to a patient to create a comprehensive care solution.
Yeah.
And if I give the final set of examples about traditional industries, physical resource-intensive industries, we've seen two or three shifts happen there as well. The first shift is with the rise of the Internet of Things. Physical products have started becoming digitized. So how mining happens, mining equipment has become digitized, industrial equipment has become digitized. And with that,
so by placing sensors on, to clarify, how is this? A traditional construction company would now use sensors to measure processes that were always manual, and now there's a digital component to it, which makes it susceptible for forming a platform around it.
Right. So let me give a concrete example from mm-hmm. construction. Right. So think of Autodesk. The way construction used to happen in the past was construction, building designers would work on Autodesk. They would create a building information file, a building information model that would be passed into the construction phase where a contractor would work on it, set up the building. And then there would be a commissioning phase where you would work with the regulator to get the building commissioned. And then the building would be in the operating phase where somebody would manage the building and there would be a building management system. Today, what's beginning to happen is all of this is coming onto a platform business, whether it's Autodesk thinking of building the platform or whether it's one of the building management system providers like Johnson Controls trying to build the platform. The way it would work on the platform and the way, for example, the Autodesk construction cloud works is that the designers come onto the platform, they create the building information model, and the idea is that the construction phase would be directly implemented through the platform. So the entire project management, the workflow management, the ability to find workers on demand based on their specific expertise would happen all through the Autodesk platform. So the single building design model becomes a central piece where all this happens. Now the regulator can also connect to it and constantly commission it. Instead of having one single commissioning, they can constantly see data about how the construction is happening and whether it's sticking to the regulations. And in the operations, because the building model is already in the platform, the building manager knows how a building is supposed to perform and whether it's not performing well. And the feedback from the building performance goes back into the platform to inform future designers when they start to design a building in the future. So in this way, everything, the whole industry gets coordinated around a single platform.
That's such a immensely comprehensive ecosystem of businesses that are connected on the platform in this example by Autodesk. So Sangeet, you just described a very comprehensive ecosystem of many companies interconnected, sharing data and information with each other. And how can How can you make this step if you are a more traditional company and you see maybe the potential for such a platform, but it's such a big risk to take, isn't it, to start building a platform yourself? How do you get people on board?
Yeah, so let's think about this strategically. There are three different questions you need to answer when you go into what you're saying. The first question is the industry ready? Right? So is the industry at a point where it is ready? The second question is, if the industry is ready, are you in the best position to create a platform? Because not every company would be well positioned to be a platform. There are only some that would have that level of leverage in an industry. So that's the second question. Are you in a good position? And the third question is, how should you structure the platform so that others do not feel threatened and want to be part of it? And let me give you just a few examples across all of this about how to get it right versus wrong. So the first thing is the industry ready? Now, let's take the example of a manufacturing or construction. 5 years back, it was not ready. But three things happened after that. The first thing is that we started seeing not just sensors being applied to machines, but entire digital twins being created, which is a digital version of how the machine is operating, right? That is how you digitize the machine. The second is that during this period, a lot of manufacturing companies started adopting the cloud. And they may not have adopted it to become a platform, they may have adopted it just to have connected operations, but they started moving their workflows and processes into the cloud. And so that allows better API connectivity across companies and allows them to easily plug into each other in a much more seamless fashion. And the third thing is we started seeing the rise of additive manufacturing during this period, because of which you can prefabricate certain parts of a building, you can prefabricate certain parts of a manufacturing product, and having distributed manufacturing or distributed construction. Now, these three things together, for example, brought the nexus for these industries, manufacturing and construction, to move in this direction. So always look for that nexus of forces to determine whether the industry is in the right position. That's the first question. The second question is, are you willing to do this? So if you think of Autodesk has almost has a majority market share in how building information models are created. And so Autodesk almost owns that standard in the design phase. Similarly, another player which is a big provider of building management systems like a Johnson Controls would be a big player in that phase. So one of these, you need to have one of these strong positions to determine whether you are well positioned to create a platform. The final question is, how do you structure it? And if you don't structure it well, the ecosystem, especially if it consists of large businesses, they won't join the platform. The difference between Amazon and a B2B ecosystem like this is that on Amazon is the 800-pound gorilla and everybody is a small mom and pop store. So the negotiation power is entirely in Amazon's favor. But if you think of large B2B companies, Maersk, the Danish shipping company, created a platform called TradeLens for ship companies to use and manage the end-to-end trade lifecycle, bring all the data about a shipment and coordinate activities around that. And a lot of companies initially resisted joining it. For the first 2 years, companies did not join this platform because Maersk had too much control over the platform and the other competing companies felt that they would get too much data from them. Only when Maersk started relaxing the governance, creating a different model of governance, then they started coming on board. So it's really important.
So what did they do exactly?
So they changed the governance structure in terms of how much insight they would have into the workings of the platform exclusively. They set up an advisory board which consisted of external players, and so they started doing started putting in some changes on the governance side to get the other players on board. But even with that, it's far from a successful platform at this point in time, and that is usually the challenge that you have when you try to bring in competitors who are large onto your platform.
Is that something that, because I think Maersk is a good example of a company that has tried to create a business-to-business ecosystem, and so they had to deal with a lot of resistance from, let's say friendly competitors to get on board with them. Do you think that's something that is common for creating B2B ecosystems. That you just said, the first 2 years you have to deal with a lot of resistance, but even now Maersk is not successful.
Right. So the thing is that there are multiple elements over here to consider. The first is, if you're building a B2B platform, are you trying to create an ecosystem of competitors, or are you trying to create an ecosystem of complementers? If you're trying to create an ecosystem of competitors, there's a lot of resistance. But if it is complementary partners, people who do not compete with you, but you are helping them grow their business, they want to come on board. So that kind of a B2B platform works. So if Maersk was building a platform where it would be the only shipper, but it would work with all the warehousing and trucking companies, that could potentially have worked. But if you really want to build a global platform, you need other shipping companies on board. So in certain cases where you can complementary platform model, that works perfectly. Where you cannot do it, so we go back to the Maersk example, the second way of doing it is to divide the infrastructural and coordination component of the platform from the business model component of the platform. So right now, what Maersk is doing is it's trying to create the common infrastructure and create a business model on top of it. In some other cases, what's usually done is a group of large companies come together to create a consortium that agrees on a common standard and a common infrastructure. And once all of them, and they all co-sponsor this common consortium, and once all of them start using the common consortium, they create new business models on top of it, which may or may not be platform business models, but they agree that it's impossible to create one platform as just one company. You have to come together. So it's important to know at what point you collaborate, at what point you compete. And it's also important to realize that when you do end up collaborating, and if it becomes, you know, if it's collaborating with many different players, there are two options. You either become a cartel in the sense that you coordinate your actions so that you create a high price, or you control pricing decisions as a cartel. Or the other option is that you completely make that cooperation layer a commodity. So if you cooperate to create a standard or to create a data sharing infrastructural layer, then that becomes a complete commodity, and that's not your business model. You create a business model on top of that. So those are the two things to think about. Are you bringing competitors or complementers? And are you in a position to do it yourself, or do you need to cooperate? And if you cooperate, is it a cartel or is it a commodity? Where are you headed?
So, and what does this mean for the internal organization of the company? Do they have to change the whole company? Do they have to attract new people in the company? How do they get their employees in this transformation?
Right. So, to what kind of platform you build, whether it's B2B or B2C, or whether it's with your competitors or complementers, irrespective of all of this, there is a significant internal change and a new internal organization that needs to come into or a new mindset that it needs to be implemented. Mm-hmm. And I would break that down at two levels. So one is that just going from non-digital to digital in itself is an organizational shift. Whether you build a platform or not, just understanding digital, understanding customer centricity, measuring customer interaction, that in itself is a shift. On top of that, when you build a platform company, the additional shift is that you have to manage an external ecosystem. So the way you think about partner management, the way you think about your contracting and business development, the way you think about procurement, all of that starts changing as well. So what's important to know is that in a platform, one of the biggest change, there are three key or big levers of organizational change. The first big lever of organizational change is how you interact with your ecosystem. That completely changes. How do you create more of a self-serve, more of a fluid model, and how do you reduce the cycles of interaction with partners and considerations along those lines? The second big change is around how you treat information and data as an asset, and how you organize the organization around that data. And in certain cases, companies have even moved from just thinking about revenue accounting to also thinking about data accounting, which is not just how much money is a business unit making, but how much monetary data is it attracting into the business. That's a new way of thinking about how you would structure the business. And the third key facet around which you think about your organization is essentially what you're measuring. Are you measuring your output as a company, or are you measuring your ability to facilitate external interactions? Sometimes means you have to fundamentally change KPIs, you have to fundamentally change leaders, because not everybody gets it. So these are the three key levers that I see repeatedly that they need to work through to effect this change. And then the final question is, do you do it in-house? Do you do it as a series of ventures? Do you do it in partnership with a large technology firm? What's the model of operationalizing it is another thing you need to think through.
In the second point, you mentioned data accounting.
Right.
I think it's an extremely interesting strain of thought. That's such a fundamental shift, and I think it's brilliant actually. If you're able to measure how you can monetize your data, then you focus what you're doing not on simply how much is this one product that I'm selling, how much am I gaining from that, but how much data can I gain from going the next step as a company or from taking this specific action.
That's right. Yeah. And there are some very tangible ways of implementing that. So if I give you an example, think of the Norwegian company Schibsted Media Group. Now, what Schibsted Media Group is a media company, which is a conglomerate that has many other holding companies, companies that it holds, right? And these are marketplaces, which were earlier classified as businesses. These are premium media assets. And what they realized is that some of their businesses create revenue, and some of their businesses create audience acquisition engines and data acquisition engines. And these two are not the same businesses. So the businesses that acquire the most audiences and get the most data are not necessarily the businesses making the most money. So they had to figure out how all these organizations could work together as an ecosystem internally rather than work individually. So they set up something very interesting. They set up something called the Traffic Fund. Okay, and the Traffic Fund is, just think of it like a regular fund, where the Traffic Fund is funded by the companies that are making money, mm-hmm. and the funds go out to the companies that are acquiring the traffic and acquiring the data, and the companies that are making the money contribute money to the fund in proportion to how much money they make through the data coming from the Traffic Fund. And the companies that are generating the data and acquiring the traffic, they are given money in proportion to how much traffic and data they acquired in the previous time period. And in this way, by creating a central traffic fund, they aligned all of these businesses, both the revenue generating ones and the data generating ones, onto one single accounting model.
Brilliant. It's fascinating. We touched very briefly, Vessel asked just now as well, about what is required from within your company. Say, let's focus on leadership to keep it specific. Do you think there are any specific traits that leadership needs to have to be able to succeed in this fundamentally new business model?
Yeah, so absolutely. I think one of the most important things in this case is that you need to have more of a systems leadership rather than a hierarchical top-down view of leadership. You need to be you need to have the ability to set vision, set direction, and set the underlying principles, and let different parts of the organization work within that framework instead of having to go completely top down the way traditional pipeline firms would manage their leadership. And so a lot of internal organizational leadership it kind of mirrors the position that a platform firm is taking externally. Because if you look at what a platform company typically does, it takes a leadership position in the industry. It says, this is where the industry is going, and this is where I'm going to take it, and you need to build your business on top of me. Think of Android. It had to say, the world is moving towards smartphones. Here's the operating system for it. We'll provide you Google Maps. We'll provide you all these capabilities. Come and make phones with us. Or think of Microsoft. They had to paint a picture of where gaming was headed, and hence created the whole Xbox ecosystem around it. So it's important not just to have that visionary leadership and this this approach of not dictating your partners, but creating a vision and helping partners move in that direction, you need to have the same principles internally as well, where you create the vision and you let almost individual business units start moving in that direction. And an extreme example of this is, of course, you know, something like the way Uber is structured. So if you look at Uber, for example, and now the reason it's extreme is because every city in Uber is an individual business. And so in their case, it's a little, the decentralization is a little more than it would be in other businesses. But what they do is they create a playbook for how you would saturate a city, how you would get into a city. And then they invest in new cities, give the team the playbook, and then they run the cities like investments. So if a city is doing well, it gets more money. If it's not doing well, it needs to get its act right before it gets more money. And so it's no longer the traditional top-down marketing. It's almost like you're giving birth to many different businesses within your...
Okay, thank you. Sangeet, I think we have come to the end of the podcast, and we're always asking one last question to our guests. And we will like to ask you to use your imagination and make a step to May 2021 and looking to yourself and what you have achieved last year. What will the things be that you're most proud of?
What would I be most proud of personally? I would personally feel very satisfied and very fulfilled if given this time of incredible change, I could help to create a playbook of how to navigate this time and find new business opportunity in the world that we're coming out in. Because 7 to 8 years back when I started this whole platform story, there were very few people who understood this and did not really fully grasp what I was talking about. But as you mentioned, around 4 to 5 years back, that wave started changing. And over that period, I started realizing the power that ideas and frameworks have in creating business change. And so what I saw happen with the platform work and what I saw happen with my work in that field, I would really like to, I would be most fulfilled if I could see something similar coming out of this period of incredible change.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
A playbook for navigation. I like it.
Great. Thank you for having me on this podcast.
Great.
Thanks so much, Sangeet. Thank you.
Dit was een podcast van Digital Shapers. Heb je naar aanleiding van het gesprek toch nog vragen voor onze gast? Stuur ons dan vooral een berichtje en laat het ons weten. Sturen wij ze door. Elke eerste maandag van de maand uploaden we een nieuwe aflevering te beluisteren op Spotify, iTunes of op www.digitalshapers.nl.